The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribes, Sir Laurence Olivier in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. We have before now turned to the novels of Charles Dickens and taken from them sequences as a basis for our radio play. Today's play comes from the same magnificent source. The setting is London and Paris at the time of the French Revolution. The book, A Tale of Two Cities. The sequences we've chosen will be familiar to you, and I myself shall be playing the role of Sidney Carton. It is a strange face which makes two men so exactly alike that one may pass for the other, which throws those men together through love, then allows the death of one to buy the life of the other, as mine shall do tomorrow, when Sidney Carton dies, that Charles Darnay may live. How did it all begin? Those 10 long years ago, that day in court, when I first saw Charles Darnay. Yes, when I first saw her. Poor Lucy. Poor dear, sweet girl. How she trembled for him even then. How obviously she loved him. How she feared for his life. For his life was at stake, that time no less than this. When fate first threw us together. When Charles Darnay was on trial for treason in London.
Silence in court.
Miss Manette, had you any conversation with the prisoner on your passage with him across the channel from France?
Yes, sir.
Recall it.
When the gentleman came on board...
Do you mean the prisoner?
Yes, sir.
Then say the prisoner.
When the prisoner came on board... He noticed that my father was very ill and weak. He had been unjustly imprisoned in the Bastille in Paris for many years.
Never mind about your father, Miss Manette. The prisoner?
He helped me to make up a bed for him on the deck and to shelter him from the weather. He was very kind to us, and I hope that I may not repay him by doing him harm today.
Miss Manette, if the prisoner does not perfectly understand that you are merely giving evidence which you cannot escape from giving with great unwillingness, he is the only person present in that condition. Please go on.
The charge on which Charles Darnay was appearing, treason and espionage, was obviously absurd. He was a Frenchman, yes, who had left his country and had settled in London for private family reasons. But as to his loyalty, there could be no possible doubt. The charges against him, in fact, were based upon the lying evidence of a professional spy and informer, one James Barsad, very well known to me. And as he gave his evidence, I slipped a note to my friend, the defending counsel.
I saw the prisoner that very night in a tavern outside the dockyard at Chatham.
5 years ago?
Yes. He was sitting there in the bar, talking secretly with two men I recognized as naval dockyard workers. And they gave him some papers.
You say again that you are quite sure it was the prisoner.
Oh, yes.
Did you ever see anyone very like the prisoner?
Oh, not so like that I could be mistaken, no.
Then look very carefully at my learned friend here. And then look carefully at the prisoner. How say you? Are they very like each other?
We were like each other. So like that we might well have passed for twin brothers. And in that likeness, Charles Darnay found salvation. The case against him was dismissed. That night, at my invitation, we dined together in a tavern off Fleet Street.
My counsel told me what you had done for me, how you called his attention to the extraordinary resemblance between us, how that fact alone broke down the charges against me. I can only thank you for that with all my heart, Mr.
I neither want thanks nor merit any, Mr. Darnay. It was nothing in the first place. And I don't even know why I troubled to do it in the second. Mr. Darnley, let me ask you a question. You think I particularly like you?
You have acted as if you do, but I don't think you do.
I don't think I do. I begin to have a good opinion of your understanding.
Well, I hope there's nothing to prevent me calling the reckoning and our parting without ill blood on either side.
No, nothing at all. Are you calling the whole reckoning?
But of course. That is the least I can do. After all, I probably owe you my life.
Good. Then bring me another pint of this wine. Draw.
And only.
Last word, Mr. Darnley.
Huh?
You think I'm drunk?
I think you have been drinking, Mr. Carton.
Think? You know I've been drinking.
Very well, then. I know you have.
Then you might as well know why. I'm a disappointed man, Mr. Darnley. I care for nobody on earth. And nobody cares for me.
You might have used your talents better, Mr. Carton.
Maybe so, Mr. Darnley. Maybe not. Good night.
Good night, sir. And once again, thank you for what you did.
I never attempted to deceive myself. Darnley had done me no ill, and only the one thing stood between us forever. It was he that Lucy Manette loved. It was not Sidney Carton. Even so, I must hear the truth from her own lips.
I fear you are not well, Mr. Carton.
No. But the life I lead is hardly conducive to health.
Is it not a pity? Forgive me, but is it not a pity to lead no better life?
God knows it's a shame.
Then why not change it?
It's too late for that. I shall never be better than I am. If it had been possible, Miss Manette, that you could have returned my love, such as I am.
Monsieur.
Ah, well, even then, I should probably have disgraced you and pulled you down. I know very well that you've no tenderness for me. I ask for none. I'm even grateful that you haven't.
Can I not help you, Mr. Carton, even without it?
Yes, if you'll hear me through, Miss Manette. I wish you to know that, having met you, you and your father has, well, stirred old shadows that I thought had died out in me. Within myself, I shall always worship you, no matter how I seem to behave. Will you believe that?
Yes.
It's useless to say it, I know, but it rises out of my soul. For you, and for anyone dear to you, I would do anything. I would give my life for you, or to keep a life beside you that you loved. I have known it in my heart all along. When Lucy Manette married Charles Darnay, I was the first to wish them happiness. In that kind and friendly home of theirs, I was an irregular but always welcome guest. For that, no doubt, I had Lucy to thank. For Charles Darnay and I could never be really friendly, no matter how much we seemed to resemble each other. Charles Darnay, Lucy Manette, and Dr. Manette, her father, all three of them are French. A French family living as émigrés in London, as there were soon to be thousands of such families. Émigrés, refugees from the terror of the French Revolution.
Is the news from France so very grave, Mr. Lorry?
Well, these last few weeks, the news has been almost too terrible to believe, my dear. And the tales we hear of life in that unhappy city, I shall not frighten you with them.
Paris was always an unhappy city, monsieur. It was an unhappy city for me when I was a prisoner in the Bastille, alone in a cell for 18 years, till my reason was all but gone.
Father dear, we agreed never to talk about that.
The storming of the Bastille, I can understand. The Bastille was notorious, the very symbol of oppression. But the stories one hears these last few months, the terror. Well, perhaps only the French can understand that.
I doubt whether even they can understand it, Mr. Carton. Sometimes it seems as though a wave of madness sweeps over the world like an epidemic disease. Men lose their wits and lose their conscience. They act blindly as though their only motivation was hate against their kind. That is what happened in France today.
The people of France have suffered bitterly. If they are filled with bitterness, we must not judge them too harshly, monsieur. Though you and I would die 1,000 times before we would raise a hand in anger against even our oppressors.
Mr. Larry, I see that my poor father is tired and upset by the news. Would you excuse us if we retire? I have a headache myself. And...
Lucy, my dear, please forgive me. I should have remembered how painful all this must be to the doctor.
Please sit down, Mr. Lorry. I know my husband has things to discuss with you. Good night.
Good night, my dear.
Good night, Mr. Carton.
Good night, madam.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, monsieur.
Sit down, Lorry. So the news from Paris is worse than ever.
Much worse. As you know, the bank has a lot of interest over there, and perhaps the news reaches us quicker than anyone else in London. We've even begun to post notices of it in the bank's windows.
So I saw this afternoon. The notices look very grave.
That is why I have decided to go to Paris myself.
What, you? But surely...
Oh, you mean I'm too old?
No, I mean that the country is disorganized, and the journey may not even
My
be safe.
My dear Charles, those are the very reasons for going. But as for it being safe, it's safe enough for me. No real bother to interfere with an old fellow like me. There are far too many people better worth interfering with.
They may not bother to make very careful inquiries, my dear sir. Charles here was arrested and put on trial for his life even here in London. They thought he was a spy, you may remember. When a city's as badly disorganized as Paris...
If it weren't disorganized, my dear Carton, there'd be no reason for my going. As it is, we have important interests at stake there.
I almost wish I were going myself in some ways. As a Frenchman born, I can't help thinking that it might be possible to preach a little reason, even to the mob. I was saying to Lucy only last night...
I wonder you dare mention her name, wishing to go to France. Leave her here to die of worry?
Nobody left to worry about you, Mr. Lorry.
Oh, nobody that's dependent on me, sir. Nor is there any cause for worry in my case. Oh, by the way... I wonder whether either of you can help me. This letter was brought into the bank today by our French courier, addressed to the Marquis Saint-Evremond, care of the bank. We've no note of him at all. Do either of you happen to know him?
The Marquis Saint-Evremond? Yes, I know him. If you leave it with me, I'll see that he receives it.
Ah, thank you. It may well be important. Well, Charles, I'll be going. I must complete my packing, for tomorrow I shall be on my way to Paris. Good night, Mr. Carton.
Good night, sir.
You'll explain to the Marquis how the letter came into my hands, Charles.
I will, rest assured.
And bon voyage.
The Marquis Saint-Evremond received that letter. Indeed, he had received it already. For the Marquis Saint-Evremond was Charles Darnay himself. Within 24 hours of reading that letter, Charles Darnay had started on the journey to Paris himself, secretly, and leaving a note to Lucy and her father. He had gone in answer to a call of honor to try and save the life of his steward, the manager of his abandoned estates in France, now under arrest by the Terror, held as a hostage for his master. And when that master arrived in Paris...
Citizen de Paris, is this the emigre of Raymond?
This is the man.
Your age of Raymond?
37.
Married of Raymond?
Yes. In England.
Without a doubt. You are consigned, Evremond, to the prison of La Force.
Just heaven! Under what law? And for what offense?
We have new laws, Evremond, and new offenses since you were last here.
I am here voluntarily, in response to that appeal there by a fellow Frenchman. He is under arrest and has asked me to appear in his defense.
You are an emigre. And emigres are forbidden to return to France on pain of death. You have read the decree.
When was that decree passed?
2 days ago.
I was already in France 2 days ago. How could I possibly have known about it sooner?
The penalty prescribed by the decree is death.
I demand a fair hearing in court. It is my right.
Emigres have no rights, Evremond.
In a moment, we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
I'd like to take this time to preview just a few of Sunday's wonderful shows for you here on NBC. There's distinguished Charles Munch conducting the NBC Symphony in Claude Debussy's Iberia and Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin. And the Marriotts, who try arranging a blind date for daughter Liz on the warmly human series The Marriage. While your NBC star Playhouse brings you Joan Fontaine in Flaubert's timeless Madame Bovary. Also, Weekend, your Sunday newspaper of the air, Collector's Item, Sunday at Home, Meet the Press, and, well, lots and lots more, and all good listening, too. So why not tune in yourself tomorrow to NBC? You'll see what we mean.
And now we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Lucy and her father did not need to wait for the news of Charles Darnay's arrest. For as soon as they knew of his journey, they had set out after him for Paris. There they learned of his arrest beyond all shadow of doubt, for he lay at the mercy of the revolutionary tribunal. And it was a fearful place, the Paris of 1792. The rule of the terror which struck away all security of life and liberty. The prisons gorged with people who had committed no offense and could obtain no hearing. And overshadowing all, the gaunt, insatiable specter of the guillotine.
Oui, de champagne. Ennemi de la République. Anne-Marie de la Rochelle. Ennemi de la République.
Terrible bloodbath of those days. Men and women, whose only crime was noble birth, were murdered by the thousands. Day after day, they stood before their accusers, the dreaded revolutionary tribunal. Day after day, they heard their sentences pronounced, and day after day, the tumbrils bore them out to the mob that surged about the guillotine. And in due course, it was the turn of Charles Darnay, the one-time Marquis Saint-Evremond.
Saint-Evremond, the Darnay! You are charged with being an enemy of the Republic. If that be true, the sentence of this tribunal is death.
Following day, Charles Darnay was condemned to death by the Revolutionary Tribunal for a crime committed some 30 years before by his father and his uncle. And against that sentence of death, there could be no appeal. I had arrived in Paris myself the evening of Charles Darnay's rearrest. I knew in my heart that nothing now could save him, nothing short of a miracle. And then, perhaps, a miracle happened. In a wine shop near La Conciergerie, I made the acquaintance of his jailer, a turnkey from the prison. And this turnkey was very well known to me. So, Mr. James Barsad, professional spy and informer of London, you now have work over here in Paris as well.
What's that to you, Mr. Carton? I'm no friend of yours.
I had proposed to win your friendship, Mr. Turnkey Barsad, Mr. Lying, Perjured, Scoundrelly Barsad.
You'll need to have good cards for that.
I have good cards, Mr. Turnkey Turncoat Barsad. You gave false evidence against a friend of mine at the Old Bailey some years ago. His name was Charles Darnay. You are now a turnkey in the Conciergerie prison in Paris, and your prisoner, one of them, is that same Charles Darnay.
I shall do nothing for him. In any case, by tomorrow he'll be dead under the guillotine.
Oh, no, Mr. Barsad. That is not in the cards I hold.
What cards are they, Mr. Carton?
Let me run them over for you. You've been a paid spy for the government in London, and you are here under a false name. That is a very good card. You are now in the employ of the French Revolutionary Government, who know far less about your spying activities in the past than I do. That is another good card. They might be persuaded, Mr. Barsad, that you are still in the pay of the British government, the aristocratic government of Pitt, the sworn foe of the revolution. That is a really excellent card, Mr. Barsad.
It's a lie. I'm here for myself. I had to leave.
I'm sure you did, Mr. Renegade Barsad. But now let me show you how I should play my cards. First, I should play this ace. Denunciation to the nearest section committee. Would you really be able to convince them that you are not a spy for the British government any longer?
Mr. Carton, in all justice...
Justice, Mr. Barsad, for a perjured informer and a spy? What cards have you got in your hand? Take your time and have a good look.
Well, very well, Mr. Carton. What do you want me to do?
Nothing very much, Mr. Barsad. Nothing will endanger your neck in any way. Something which will remove a danger from you forever. I told him what I had in mind and what he must do to help me. After all, there was only the one thing possible if Charles Darnley was to be saved. And that one thing, I had already decided that I must do. Not for Darnley himself, perhaps, but for the woman that he'd married. Only this one night left. There was no time to be lost. Only one other man in Paris who could help me. Mr. Lorry, the banker. Don't ask me why I'm giving you these instructions, Mr. Lorry. I have a reason, a good one.
I do not doubt it, Mr. Carton.
Charles Darnley, there can be no further hope. We know that. I have reason to believe that Dr. Manette and Lucy are in very grave danger as well, and that they may be arrested after Darnley has died. Therefore, they must at once leave Paris and get back to safety in England.
I had already intended to take them back with me, Mr. Carton.
Yes, but you must do so tomorrow. Your preparations have already been made, I know. Early tomorrow, have your horses ready so that you may start at 2 p.m.
Charles Darnley is due to die at 3, Mr. Carton.
Yes, yes. It is imperative that Dr. Manette and Lucy should leave the city before that. It is imperative, Mr. Lorry. You will also reserve a place for me in your coach.
I should be glad to do that, Mr. Carton.
You have your papers for traveling. So has Dr. Manette and his daughter. You see, these are my papers, made out for Sidney Carton, an Englishman. Take these papers and keep them for me. Bring them to the coach tomorrow.
But Mr. Carton...
No, do that for me, Mr. Lorry. I have obtained permission to pay one last visit to Darnley at the prison tomorrow at noon.
You have? But how? I was told...
Never mind how. You must persuade Lucy to leave in the coach with you tomorrow at 2 o'clock precisely. Mm-hmm. You must tell her that her father is in danger. Never mind herself. She will probably wish to die with her husband. Tell her that she must leave Paris with you, that it is her husband's dying wish. Mm-hmm. Tell her that more depends on it than she dare believe or hope. Tell the same thing to her father. You must make them do as I say.
I think I can do that, Mr. Carton.
I thought so. Quietly and steadily have all arrangements made in the courtyard here, even to taking your own seat in the carriage. The moment I come and join you, take me in and drive away.
I understand that I wait for you under all circumstances.
You have my traveling papers here with the rest and have promised to reserve my place. Wait for nothing but to have my place occupied. And then for England.
Your place occupied?
Yes.
Very well, Mr. Carton.
And now, promise me solemnly that nothing will influence you to alter the course we have agreed upon.
I promise you, Mr. Carton.
Remember those words tomorrow. Change the course or delay it in any way for any reason, and no life can possibly be saved, and many lives must inevitably be sacrificed.
I will remember. I shall do my part faithfully.
I hope to do mine no less. Goodbye, Mr. Lorry.
Goodbye, Mr. Carton.
Only one purchase to be made at the apothecary's. One last night to spend in that seething, turbulent city that knew no mercy and lived only by hate. And then on the morrow, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Carton! What on earth?
Of all people upon earth, you least expected to see me.
I can scarcely believe it. You're not a prisoner, too.
No. I happen to have influence with one of the turnkeys here. He let me visit you. I come from your wife, dear Darnley, with a request from her.
What is it?
A most earnest, pressing, and emphatic entreaty, addressed to you in the most pathetic tones of the voice so dear to you.
Yes.
You have no time to ask me why I bring it or what it means. I have no time to tell you. You must simply do as I say. Take off those boots you're wearing and put on these of mine. No,
quickly.
Captain, there is no escape here from this place. It can't be done. You'll only die with me. It's madness.
He's asking you to escape. Change that cravat for this of mine.
But,
and your coat.
Oh, Carton, dear Carton, I tell you it's madness. I implore you not to add your death to mine.
The coat, man, quick. I've no time to explain.
Nobody can escape from here. It's always failed.
Now the ether. Goodbye, Charles. Sorry I had to do that. Bassett. You see? The wonderful resemblance. Just like it was that time at the Old Bailey. You've nothing to fear. I'll soon be out of harm's way. Get assistance and take me to the coach.
Take you, Mr. Carter?
Yes, him, you fool, him. He was weak and faint when you brought him in. The parting was too much for him. He's fainted. These things happen. Quick, call your assistance.
You swear you won't betray me?
Take him what I told you. Put him in the coach that is waiting. You'll soon have nothing further to fear. And now, there is nothing left but the ending. May it not be unworthy of one who aspired to love her. May the lives for which I lay down my life be peaceful, useful, prosperous, and happy in the England that I shall see no more. May this beautiful city and brilliant people rise from the abyss once more, and in their struggles to be truly free, wear out the evil of this time.
Citizen Evremonde called Darnay, your hour has come. Follow me.
I am ready. It is a far, far better thing I do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better rest that I go to than I have ever known. This is Laurence Olivier again. Our cast in today's play, Sidney Carton, based on sequence...